Well, hello, everybody out there in podcast land. Welcome to the Front Row Network's Flashbacks, a part of NPR Illinois' Community Voices, where we get all nostalgia-like about the movies of our past, movies from the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s that have shaped the way we look at cinema and pop culture today, and how those movies have given us insight and hope in our everyday lives. If you have ever been playing a mediocre murder mystery board game and thought, hey, this should be a movie, well, then you might be thinking about Clue. Welcome, everybody, to the last episode of 2020. I am your host, Ryan, and with me tonight is always my go-to guy when it comes to everything horror. Jay, what's going on?
Oh, not much. Speaking of horror, just got the kids to bed.
I heard you use a little bit Metallica.
Hell yeah.
I'm learning through Jay on what is appropriate when it comes to parenting. So I'm putting
Metallica. I'm definitely not the person you should go to for that. Beatings, cussings, heavy metal. That's the path.
Got it.
This is the way.
This is the way.
And with us, as always, is the person that keeps us grounded and, of course, makes sure we are hydrated. Aaron, how's it going?
Good. Making sure everyone, I'm a nurse, I'm a mom and everybody up here in flashbacks, making sure they're staying hydrated through pandemic and influenza season. Also just got my kids to bed. You were saying yours was having a rough day. Mine, when I put him in timeout, he's two. He slams the door before I can close it to make sure he ascertains dominance.
All these before things I can I get have to the look door. Forward to. All these things.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be a good time.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is great. So we have a great episode planned for this evening. But before we get on to that, we actually have a first timer here with us tonight, Mr. Rob. Rob, how is it going?
Very well, very well. Thanks for having me on the show, everybody. I have to throw in my two cents about my kid. My kids, I've got three, and the youngest one is 18 months now, and his new favorite thing to do is throw Matchbox cars off the balcony on the second story onto everyone that's walking by. So we spent the last couple days either getting pegged in the head or narrowly avoiding getting pegged in the head. So that's
those things really get some. They're real dangerous from high heights.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, physics is not on your side on that.
We made a rule that anything that gets thrown off the balcony disappears, trying to scare them. So now he throws his brother's toys because he's an evil genius and knows that we won't take away his brother's toys for something he's doing. So I don't really know how to deal with that.
What you gonna do, Dad?
So for those of you at home keeping score, you know, since we are going to be talking about a board game, Front Row Flashbacks is no longer going to be talking about movies. We're just going to have a parenting podcast. That's what we're going to evolve into for next year. No, I don't think we're ever going to stop talking about movies. So before we jump into Clue, Rob, per tradition, anybody who comes on first time, we have to ask the question, what is your favorite movie and why?
Yeah, so you guys mentioned that, and I swear this isn't fan service or me sucking up, but honest to God, my favorite movie is Clue, which really made me laugh when you said you're going to ask me that question. I'm like, they're never going to believe me. But it's one of those movies. It's very nostalgic for me. I grew up watching it. Like it was one of those movies that my dad or my sister would just put on every so often. And we all could like quote it by heart and we would laugh about it. And I've always been of a mind like, you know, everyone's got their favorite action movie. Everyone's got their favorite comedy. Everyone's got their favorite romance or horror or whatever. To me, Clue's just like my, you know, gun to my head. If I had to pick a favorite movie, it's that one. Cause I can just watch it over and over and over again. So
that's awesome. Yeah.
That would be a weird thing for somebody to put a gun to your head and ask you a question.
Well,
what's your favorite movie?
You never know. You have to be prepared for all things.
Quick.
You know, after hearing Clue! It's Clue!
shit, no, Raiders!
All right, well, we are going to be talking about Clue tonight. It is Christmas season, you know, way back when. I'm sure people have gotten Clue for a holiday present. And, you know, this is a great family movie. It's It's a bit crazy, but I think a lot of people watch this when they get together with their family. So why not end the year with this movie? So let's just dive in. Jay, give us the rundown when it comes to Clue.
A mysterious individual has sent blackmail letters inviting six strangers to a Scooby-Doo-style mansion for a wonderful murder mystery dinner. One by one, bodies start to pile up as a vaudeville troupe of terrible people work to solve the mystery through clever wordplay and physical comedy before they all wind up dead.
That's actually pretty good. All right.
This one was hard to do.
Yeah.
I have to say.
I like it, though. I like it.
Because part of the gag in the movie is that the plot is convoluted. Like, it's part of the comedy of it is that the mystery's convoluted, which made it very hard.
I almost asked you to do it like Tim Curry at the very end.
Just run us
run around.
Keep going. Just run them out.
Please don't do that, because I know Jay well enough to know I would be the Mr. Green getting drug all over the place and thrown on the floor, and I don't really want to.
I believe that. All right, so before we start talking the movie in general, we have to know the basics of this movie. And Aaron, give us your favorite line.
Fun facts.
Let's hear them.
Fun facts for Clue. This movie was directed by Jonathan Lynn. It was written by both Jonathan Lynn and John Landis. You know, like we mentioned, it was based off of the game that I believe, did that game come out in 1976? 1972 is when Clue, the board game, I think, first came out. It's starring Eileen Brennan as Mrs. Peacock, Tim Curry as Wadsworth, Madeline Kahn as Mrs. White, Christopher Lloyd as Professor Plum, Michael McKean as Mr. Green, Martin Mull as Colonel Mustard, Leslie Ann Warren as Miss Scarlet, Colleen Camp as Yvette, and Lee Vang as Mr. Body. And this is one of those movies where if you're not familiar with the names and then you're watching it, you are like, I totally know all of these people from the 80s and the 90s and in the 70s. So the budget of this film was an estimated $15 million. And it only grossed about $14,643,000. I got that number real messed up. It grossed about 14.6 million in the US. I'm having problems. I need more water too. that's only in the US. I don't know what it grossed worldwide.
It was the same. It was the same worldwide. So it didn't make anything.
Wow.
Interesting. Which is the game. Looked it up. 1943.
Pluto. Yeah.
That's when the game came out?
Yeah. It was originally called Cluedo.
That much.
Cluedo. Look at Rob.
I thought that was Spanish for Cluedo.
No.
Why you guys have a place in Springfield called Taco Gringos?
Where we play Cluedo.
I love it. Rob's coming in with the fun facts himself. Okay, yeah, so this movie... Go on.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that always surprised me that it was not, I guess, since I loved it so much, I always assumed it was a super popular movie, but it really wasn't. It didn't do well at all.
Well, you know what, though? It is kind of one of those things I think that I'm finding, too, is like it's got very much a cult following and right. It's got like it's very, very endearing. It's a very witty movie. So like my husband and his friends, they're like, they can't say enough good things about the movie. Like you're in good company with them. They think it's the greatest.
That's why we're going to have Steve. I think it's Steve's favorite or one of his favorites. Jeremy, our editor in chief, it's one of his favorites. One of the guys from Derry Public Radio who was on for a Shining episode. It was his favorite. And I'm like, it's like blowing my mind how many people say it's their favorite movie. So but I'll get into it once we get through fun facts. I think there's a trend for the people who like it. I think it's a theater person's movie.
Oh, I could see that. I could really see that.
And I think it's the comedy, the vaudevilleness of it, the wordplay. This would be great on a stage. So I've noticed it's a lot of people who are really into theater.
Okay.
Mm.
Agreed.
Really like good point. Because, you know, also when you look, like, the Rotten Tomatoes score is 65% and the Metascore on IMDb is, like, 39. Like, this is, like, guilty pleasure territory as well.
But again, I think this is one, though, the audience score is, like, 85%.
Yeah, and it's...
I think this is one where the critics score and the audience score. Mm. I also think this is a movie that needs re-looked at. Yeah, re-reviewed.
That's why we're here.
Yep. It is. I think, honest to God, I think that the comedy, it was, great. They weren't getting it. I don't think it was very not an 80s style of comedy.
Yeah.
And I think it went over everybody's head.
It almost had like a British feel to it.
Yeah.
With that kind of comedy that the people smart, just
the smart
don't user. Pick up on.
You know what I thought? Marx Brothers, Abbott and Costello.
Yeah.
So that's why I put that line about the vaudeville troupe. It very much felt to me like those 30s and 40s style movies from the people that did vaudeville and then went into film is what it reminded me a lot of.
Yeah.
Great point. So the one more fun facts about this movie is that three different endings were shot and a different one was shown at each theater when it was released. All three are included on the video. So if you're going to watch that, like I watched it on Amazon Prime. And so it just goes seamlessly into each ending. My understanding was, oh yeah. Okay. That's in there. My understanding is that some cities, the newspaper print ads indicated which version, ending A, B, or C, was being shown in each theater. But the point was is that people would come out and talk. So does that mean, like, even within the same city, there may be different endings that were shown? Because that's brilliant.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I agree that it is brilliant. But apparently the critics, I read an article that they slammed them for that. They called it like a cheap marketing ploy.
And they're just trying to get their mouths up, but it clearly did not work.
Yeah. They're actually,
I think that's so cool.
There's actually a fourth ending actually a fourth ending that was in the book. There was a novelization to it.
Oh my
and,
God.
It was considered too dark.
Oh,
they cut it. But
the whole movie's about murdering people.
Yeah, so. I know, right? So basically, at the end, let me take that back. I'm sorry. There's a fourth ending that's in the novelization. There's also a scene that they took out though of the Miss Peacock ending, which I know we're gonna talk about. But they took a scene out of that, and it was basically that the chief shot her, and then when everybody came out.
So when she's at her car, they ask her if she...
They kill her. And then they said, that's too dark. And so they refilmed it and they did that line with, I'm a senator's wife.
And that's funny.
Yeah, and that's why it's off film and you don't actually see her say that. So.
Okay.
Oh. Okay, I could see that, I guess. Wow. Well, here's some more fun facts that I'm sure Rob knows. Rob, we should have had Rob do the fun fact.
Yeah,
The color of each character's car is the same color as their playing piece in the game. So as they're introduced, Colonel Mustard drives a yellow 1954 Cadillac Series 62. Mrs. White drives a black and white 1950 MGTD convertible. Mrs. Peacock drives a blue 1952 Packard 200 Deluxe Club Sedan. Mr. Green drives a green 1951 Plymouth Cranbrook. Miss Scarlet drives a 1946 Red Lincoln Continental. And Professor Plum drives a purple 1949 Pontiac Streamliner station wagon.
Which is funny that they did that. Because Miss Scarlet hitches a ride with Professor Plum.
Right.
So the car thing is almost irrelevant, but they still stayed true in some aspects. So that's pretty
cool. Yeah. I didn't know that, actually. I that was news to me when I read what you guys wrote, and which I also think it's kind of funny because you only see a couple of them in cars. The rest of them, they just show up inside the house.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it's real quick, and you don't even notice.
Yeah.
And then the secret passages in the movie led to the same rooms they do on the board game. The kitchen leads to the study and the conservatory leads to the lounge.
All right. That's going to wrap it up for fun facts. All right. So let's flash back. Let's talk about our first memories when it comes to this film. Rob, you had already alluded to it, so we're going to start with you. You're our guest. So just kind of elaborate some more. Like, what are your first memories when it comes to Clue?
Yeah, no, I imagine Clue when I think of that, and I think of watching it as a kid. I think of VHS tapes, and I'm pretty sure my parents had it on a VHS. It was like a Tim Curry marathon VHS, right? It had like Legend, I think, and Rocky Horror Picture Show. I think they were all three on there.
I feel like I want this. I feel like I want this VHS.
Right. Well, it wasn't like a one you buy in stores. Like, well, this was like they recorded it off the TV.
Basically. Okay.
Oh, we had some of those too. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
It said kids movies. Yeah, exactly. Legend, Clue, and then Rocky Horror.
Yeah. But no, I remember watching it and being really just in love with the, you know, I don't think I understood a lot of the humor at the time because I was younger, but I really enjoyed the like real quick, the language, right? Just how snappy the dialogue was and the physical comedy. My God, the physical comedy was just great. Mr. Green getting thrown all over the place and Mrs. White with her little noises that she makes like throughout the entire movie. Like just all that kind of stuff. And then as time went on, like I said, and we would watch it more and more, it's one of those movies where I feel like I just constantly would pick up a new thing. Every time I watched it, there was a new joke that would pop out, or I was a little older, so I'd started understanding some of the innuendo type stuff. So, yeah, really a movie that worked on a lot of levels for me.
Awesome. Thanks, Rob. Aaron, what are your first memories when it comes to Clue?
I'm not a great flashbacks host this time around because I had never seen the movie.
Was this your first?
I had never seen it until today.
Oh,
but if I'm going to flashback, it was to a time about probably a year or a year and a half ago where my husband was like, you got to see this movie. It's so great. And he put it on and I couldn't get past the dinner scene because things are kind of like dry and weird until then. And I was like, I can't do this. And I think I like went to bed and then I started feeling that again today where I was just like, I know this gets bad. Like I was just like, oh, I remember like sitting here and watching this and being like, I can't, because they all like are just so annoyed to be there. And then the movie got going and I was like, oh my God, this is so great. I understand why everyone loves this so much. So today was the first day. I had a great time. It was a wonderful time at 2 p.m. today watching Clue.
Nice.
This is going to be great for your flashback of, you know, 7 hours ago. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
All right, Jay, what are your first thoughts when it comes to Clue?
I'm not much better. This is not a movie I ever watched when I was younger. And I'll tell you why. I had never heard anything good about it when I was younger. I'd never heard not a single good word. Everyone I'd heard hated the movie. I was like, oh, well, I guess I won't watch that. And then last year, my daughter got two versions of Clue for Christmas. And then me and Ryan talk all the time. We get a lot of our digital purchases on Vudu. And Vudu is pretty good with the sales they run. And Clue will – it's actually on sale right now on Vudu as well, because people get the board game, they're probably going to buy the movie. And that's exactly why we bought the movie. We got the board game. My daughter's like, ah, there's a movie version of the game. We should get it. So we got it. And we all watched it and we liked it. I liked it. I don't have the same enthusiasm as Rob and some of the aforementioned people in the group, but I liked it.
Do you like it more than Dick Tracy?
I like everything except Cool World more than Dick Tracy.
Oh, I forgot about your love for Cool World.
No, my hate for Cool World. I hate Cool World. It's a hate.
Oh, I didn't know you hate it. Okay. I love it. It's so stupid.
That's why he keeps bringing it up.
Yeah. Lou's going to get this done so we don't have to talk about it again. Except I talk about Dick Tracy literally every episode now.
It's kind of our shtick.
That was hard to get through. But my real first memory is I couldn't believe how stacked the cast was.
Yeah.
I thought this was, man, just stacked. You know, Tim Curry, obviously, with Madeline Kahn, with all the, young Frankenstein and Blazing Saddles. And I'm thinking Mel Brooks, Christopher Lloyd, you know, Doc Brown, yeah. Michael McKean, and Spinal Tap, and you know, every other thing he's in. Martin Mull, who stands out to me, too, because I was a huge Roseanne fan, which I've talked about multiple times.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that's right.
And really, he's kind of a sitcom mainstay in the 90s. Really, he's on a ton of different sitcoms. So, man, just the whole cast kind of blew me away. And what really stands out to me is all these people, to me, for the most part, are known for being an ensemble cast. For the most part, none of these are stars. None of these are people who run a movie. They are all people who are used to being an ensemble, and it showed because they knew how to make each other shine in moments. So yeah, that's the big first takeaway for me from the first time I saw it. I was like, holy crap. I had no clue all these people were in this movie that for some reason as a kid I was told was a hunk of junk. And it's just not true. It's a very, very fun movie.
Yeah. For me, my first memory, am I the only one that like saw this religiously on TV? Like I remember this movie being on TBS and TNT like almost every weekend. And I specifically remember only being able to catch the ending. And that's like the best part.
So that's funny.
That's like my biggest memory. Like whenever I would catch it, it would be the end. You know, and I finally sat down and watched it, you know, probably like when I was 13, 14. But no, I just remember seeing this movie on TV and just watching the zany end. So like Aaron said, you know, the beginning is very drawn out because you're waiting for something to happen. But that's the best part about this movie, and we'll talk about that in our takeaways, because once it starts, it does not stop. But yeah, just the endings. I mean, So I remember watching it and falling in love with the ending because it was just so crazy. And like Rob said, when I got older, and just watching it recently, like I think I laugh more now than I did when I've seen it, you know, the countless times I've seen it before this. Just every joke was just spot on, but I can see how that's, you know, 1985, it's not going to catch on because it's very smart humor. I mean, some of the zany jokes are just very quick and people probably didn't catch them and didn't.
People were stupid in the 80s.
So yeah, I mean, I think the movie did not get the credit that it deserves, and I'm ready to talk about it and defend it. So let's hop right into it. Let's talk about takeaways when it comes to this movie. Let's start with Aaron. Aaron, you saw this movie 7 hours ago. What's your biggest takeaway?
Oh, my gosh.
Day past the dinner scene.
Exactly. Everybody made it past the dinner scene, and that was it. My biggest takeaway. Go to Rob first. I'm not ready.
I'm not ready for you.
Fine. I'm still
you're processing
the fact. I'm processing also that I didn't know TBS showed anything but Shawshank Redemption.
Oh yeah.
So
Ryan literally mentions TBS every episode. He's like, I used to watch this on TBS 24 hours.
TBS, TBS and TNT, I don't know what it was, but everything. They had everything on.
We need to get Ted Turner to start paying some money here to
get WTW back up again.
To get Aaron a fancy mic.
Rob,
oh my gosh.
You're our guest. What's your takeaway from this movie?
You know what? You're going to have to tell me what you mean by, like, what's your normal takeaway?
The acting, the set direction.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, direction, you name it.
Yeah, man, that's rough because there's so much I like about it. I guess, yeah, for me, it would have to be the acting and how well everyone plays off everyone else in the movie. There's, you know, I feel like a lot of movies like this, you can watch them and there's definitely some standout people, but there's usually one or two that kind of hang back or they're not as good or they're a little stilted or forced, or, you know what I mean? But no one in this movie is like that. They all play their parts just to perfection. Tim Curry obviously is just, you know, a force of nature in this movie and just a joy to watch. But like, you know, Mr. Green, his character, I absolutely love. You know, some of this stuff obviously doesn't age well a little bit.
Right.
You know, but I think that's part of the charm too, because that was that time period.
It's a time capsule, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's how people acted then. That's the, you know, the things that they didn't talk about, you know, like homosexuality that came up and like everyone was, you know, I mean.
Right.
Everyone was uncomfortable.
Christopher Lloyd by Professor Plum. And
yeah, he gets up immediately. Walks away. I mean, so yeah. So I feel that even that in itself, it doesn't age well necessarily, but at the same time, it kind of does because that is just sort of a little time capsule of what that was like.
I would also argue Professor Plum's definitely a homophobe.
Oh,
in line with his character.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. His character is just a skeez.
And you know what? Really, I'm just thinking about that right now. Cause I watched it again today, just kind of while I was doing some work, I kind of, you know, skimmed through it just to refresh myself a little bit. And it amazed me some of the things that popped up in the movie that are like hot button topics right now, which
no, totally,
you know, like homosexuality, Professor Plum was like touching every woman.
Oh yeah.
At every point that he could, you know, just the little things like that, that are real
political corruption.
He slept, yeah, he slept with one of the students.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or his patients. It was his patient.
So, everyone, the constant theme of communism is a red herring. Like, I was dying.
Yeah. Yeah. Or when, the Wadsworth was like, my wife was a socialist. And, you know.
Yes! And they're all like.
Or her friends were socialists.
Things are a lot different. Yeah.
So, but anyway, for me, it's the acting. It's just, it's.
Yeah, was she a democratic socialist?
So I don't know why we didn't include this in our fun facts. But Leslie Ann Warren, who played Miss Scarlet, she was a late addition. There was a very well-known actress who was slated to be Miss Scarlet, but she was having issues, so she opted out.
Susan Sarandon?
Carrie Fisher.
Oh.
Carrie Fisher. Wow.
Carrie Fisher was slated.
Why do you think I have my Leia buns on?
And that would have been what? After?
It was after Jedi.
Jedi.
She asked the studio. The studio said that she could drop out, and so Leslie Ann Warren was hopped on there right away. I love this movie because my favorite movie is Jaws, and Jeffrey Kramer is in this movie. Jeffrey Kramer plays one of the
driver.
Murder victims, but he played. Yeah. Hendrix in Jaws, but he plays the motorist. And the best part about this is, like, even the people that just come in randomly and die, they serve like this greater connection to all these key players. And the best part, they're so nuanced in how they act and how they're like, oh, I noticed this person, but I'm not going to forwardly display it. Like, you could tell there's a hint of recognition, but then when they spill the beans before they die, you're like, oh, okay. And then when you get all that information, it just makes the end so much better because you're getting all this information. So I just thought that that even the supporting cast, like support was really well done. So, Aaron, what are your thoughts when it comes to the acting?
No, I love exactly what you're saying is those kind of secondary characters. Like, I love the police officer who comes in and he's like watching everyone while they're all like, you know, running around and trying to pretend like everything's okay when he's on the phone, when he's like, what's going on here? Why are you getting calls from J. Edgar Hoover? What's happening? Like, he was awesome. And to what Jay's saying, like with the kind of the like stage acting presence and that tie in to like the vaudeville or like Abbott and Costello and Three Stooges. It's like, you know, so many points in those kind of movies where like all of a sudden they just flip behind a secret door, you know, or they're like watching or like a dead body falls on them and they're trying to like fix it. The way the physical comedy of the way that they're treating every dead body in this movie.
Yes.
Is like,
yeah, like the part where they were
ridiculous.
Acting like they were hooking up with them.
Oh my god.
Shaboom, shaboom.
Oh, ridiculous. Yes.
And you mentioned Three Stooges. Mr. Body literally gave two fingers to the eyes to Colonel yep. Mustard.
That's right. Yes. Forgot about that.
Yes. It's just, it's really brilliantly done. Tim Curry is like, you know, in the beginning, he's obviously kind of he's like a background character, or like, oh, I'm just the butler for like 5 minutes. And then he really does lead the rest of them around and the plot and everything, which is just so fun to watch. So I really enjoyed the actress who played Miss Scarlet. I enjoyed all of them. Yeah. Mrs. Peacock was like, I just thought it was so funny with all the like, how they all had like political ties and they were all... some sort of connection to like DC or secrets and all this stuff like that. Yeah. Cause literally when Miss Peacock walked in, I was like, my God, she looks like a fancy, like a real fancy, Elizabeth Warren. So I was cracking up, and then just, I loved the actress who played Miss Scarlet, a real Susan Sarandon kind of feel to her.
I was gonna say it's the poor man Susan Sarandon. She looks so much like her.
It's
yes, and some of the mannerisms too. Yes. Like just how she like how excited, you know, she'd be like, "Oh yeah, yeah," like I don't know. It was.
She's always popping her really hip cool. out.
Yeah,
always. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's Yvette, the woman who plays the
Colleen Camp.
Yeah.
Yes. The woman who plays the sexy French maid, like she's wonderful. Everyone's great.
Jay, what are your thoughts when it comes to the acting?
Well, and I'll tie it with takeaways. I think everybody involved knew the movie. You know, we kind of said at the time, it doesn't seem like the critics to me really got it, but everybody mm-hmm. knew what kind of movie it was, but the script and how tight it was, and how the movie actually really does play out like the board game, like I think was could have been a really like, oh, this is freaking hokey. And it was not. It didn't come across hokey. And I think that's the thing, Aaron. If you've ever played Clue, like the first 10 minutes are like figuring out cards and trying to remember. Wait, hang on. You got to take these, put them in the seat, and get the rules out. Like, if you don't play Clue once a week, you forget the rules and how to play. So, like, it is. Like, to start the game is kind of dragged. Then as you go, it, like, picks up. Then you start getting excited because you got all the clues. And you're like, boom, I'm going to tell you who's in that envelope. It is like that because that's how the game ends, right? You say who, the what, the what, and where. The murder, that's how the end of this movie. So this movie played out like the game. And like I said, the fact that it wasn't hokey and that it was pretty, pretty impressive. So yeah, I like that everybody knew what kind of movie they were in, how the script read, you know, the lot of wordplay, you know, Tim Curry telling the dogs to sit, Mr. Green going, okay.
You know? Not you.
It's like all that really quick, and it was really quick. Boom, 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 snappy stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you're not paying it, I mean, this is a movie, you can't look at your phone.
Mm-mm. You jokes are awesome.
I don't know. It's weird because it's also light, right? It's light, it's fun, but you're like, you're going to miss so many good jokes.
And I think it's one of those movies that you just probably like, as I was watching it, I was like, oh, you need to watch, like, it does get better probably the more you watch it.
Oh yeah.
I agree. I want to chime in here with Jay and then we can kind of continue on when we talk about the script, because I think the script is fantastic. I think this is probably, you know, the actors and the characters only work because of how well they're written. To come up with in 1985, to come up with a story set in the midst of a Cold War and then make it a murder mystery was nothing short of brilliance.
You know,
because you can really do a lot with that type of scenario, and they killed it. Because, you know, yeah, it's a little slow in the beginning, but it really takes off. And you learn, it's not like you get all the information right at the very end. Like, you learn things as you go. So it's almost like you're playing the game with them as you're processing things. And then when they explain things, you almost want to go back and rewatch to try to see how things tie together, which makes this movie worth watching again, because that screenplay is just so well done. Everything down to the nitty little gritty. You know, and we didn't mention Madeline Kahn. Madeline Kahn is an Academy Award nominated actress. She was nominated for Blazing Saddles for Best Supporting Actress. But one of my favorite parts in the movie is where we find out the connection with Yvette. And this line is completely improv, which makes this work. But when she's sitting there and she's trying to talk about the connection with Yvette, I think she forgot a line, because then she goes,
Flames.
On the side of my face. That was completely improv, and it was so hysterically brilliant. It was just delivered flawlessly, and they kept it. So, you know, whether it was in the script or not, this was very well done, which allowed these actors to take on these characters and just run away with it. So I've got another takeaway, but I'm not. Let's talk more about this. So what do you guys think about when it comes to the writing? I know Jay had said his piece. So, Rob, what do you think?
You know, it's kind of funny. I read an article today, actually, about the writing. It was talking about when the first time that he went to the writer, and I cannot remember his name, and it's going to kill me, but Jonathan Lynn. Yes. It was the first time he went to meet with the producer, and the producer was saying, you know, I want you to make a movie out of Clue. And he's like, what are you talking about? You want me to make a movie out of a board game? Like, that's not even possible. And they basically, what Jonathan Lynn said, or excuse me, yeah, Jonathan Lynn said that they had come up with such strong characters, and he was explaining all of the characters to him, and he was like running around the room and jumping over furniture and really like acting out these characters, and he was so passionate and excited about them, and he had them so fleshed out and fully formed that it really helped him basically write the entire screenplay, because he had such fully formed, like, envisioned characters. And I can 100% see that. I think there's a great story, you know, that, like Jay said, it really does work. Like, it's not hokey and the story works, but honestly, the characters drive this entire thing. Like, I could just watch all these people interact in a room, you know, just sitting around drinking cocktails and talking to each other too. Like, so I think that's, for me, the big thing with the story is that I think it was very, very character centric. And I think that's why it works.
Yeah. I think it helps too, you know, John Landis mentioning that he was one of the story writers. National Lampoon's, wrote and directed Blues Brothers, wrote and directed An American Werewolf in London. I mean, so he was hot. And this was a thriller, you know?
Well, Jonathan Lynn went on and did My Cousin Vinny. So, I mean, he's dabbled in the comedy scene too.
And when you look at like what actually came out in 1985, like, this movie was up against a lot of competition in different areas as far as action and comedy and there was already another movie taking on communism in 1985, and that movie was Rocky IV.
Oh man, here we go.
I could see how in 1985, as far as the critics go or anything, like, this movie getting lost in a shuffle where you've got a real novel concept going, oh my God, we're making a movie out of a game. You're throwing all of these people in there. And while this is a very heavy Brat Pack movie year, it's a very heavy action movie year, it's a very heavy drama movie year, people being like, nah, like, they just feel like it doesn't really hit the prestige category, but it doesn't really fit anywhere else either at the time.
Well, and I think it's always I mean, granted, I'm not a film critic and I don't know a ton about movies, but I think it's always chancy, right? It's always dicey to try something new. And, totally. And this was the first, I mean, as far as I know, this was the first board game inspired movie. So
yeah, and because it bombed, it took 27 years to get Battleship.
Which is such a great movie. I was just going to say something about Battleship. You stole it from me.
I'm still waiting for the horror film Hungry Hungry Hippos.
That would be very scary.
Blumhouse, here it comes.
Okay, so we've talked about the acting. We've talked about the writing. We've talked about the director. One thing that I want to talk about in terms of the takeaway is production design. This mansion kicks butt. I love this mansion. It was great.
I feel like it's like becomes the template for like every mansion after this.
Right. Like this mansion was fantastic. Like whoever was in charge of production nailed it.
It's a character in itself.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you've got the house, you've got the secret passages, but not just that too. Like, you know, we talked about in fun facts, like they went so far as making the cars, the pawn pieces. Like this was really thought out when it came to the production. I mean, they nailed the 1950s feel. They nailed the mansion. They nailed everything about what Clue is in the production design. So I don't know if you guys want to share anything else or that. Otherwise, we can move on. Anybody else got anything like for in terms of takeaway?
I riff off that. It got one-upped by A Murder Mystery last year. But, I mean, took 34 years to get there. But
Knives Out.
And Knives Out, 100%, probably. I'm sure Rian Johnson was inspired.
Yeah. I definitely got some Clue vibes watching that movie. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that movie's awesome.
Yeah. I will say that Clue definitely influenced me. Anytime I go into a house with chandeliers, I'm always like, going to walk around that, not underneath.
Look at you and your rich friends.
Well, yeah. Okay.
Before we
not my house.
I know our scripts has got like two. We're gonna talk improvements because we're talking about what makes this movie so great with the takeaways. Let's talk about things that very well could have been improved on. I know that we've talked about this is gonna be my big thing is, you know, you have a movie that starts off a little bit on the slower side, but to me that makes it work because then it sits you and you're like, oh, you're gonna be bored, but then it really takes off. So I don't know if that's necessarily an improvement. But to me, it's just like that slow ending, but then it pays off at the end. So that's my thought. Who wants to go next?
I'll riff off that. I do think it kind of the pace kind of has an accordion effect a little bit. Like, I don't know. The pacing does seem odd throughout. I get what you're saying, Ryan, where it's like that slow build, but I think it builds and kind of fades, builds, and I think it can make it tough on maybe your first viewing. I think that.
Where
might
do
be
you think it fades the
off.
Second time?
I think the drawing room. That's what I was going to say, Jay. I think when they're in the drawing room all together before the game starts, it plates again. Like they get their gifts, and you're like, okay, it's about to start, and you're just kind of like waiting for something to tick.
Yeah, I think there's that, and then I think. I don't know. I like the story's convoluted. Like there's no doubt about it, right? That's why there's three different endings, right? For fun. And it's making light of the idea of this whole board game is just right. If you actually
so many different possibilities,
it, right? If you actually think about the board game, it's preposterous. Like why are there this many people in this mansion? Why did a murder happen? Why?
Why are all these weapons in this house?
Right. So if you like try to think about it like a personal, it's a board game. Nobody's thinking about it that we don't think about Monopoly that way. But I do think it gets maybe a little too much into that. Maybe it gets a little too tied into the, confusion of the mystery that it's really more poking fun at than trying to create is at least the feel that I got. But I think that if they would have tightened that up a little bit too.
Okay.
Do you think that that was intentional at all because there were three different endings planned and they just wanted to make sure it didn't sway any other way or no?
It may have been. And then that would come to, I like the idea of the three endings, but would like one
it was enough
kick-ass ending have made the movie stronger?
Rob, you are counterpoint. Rob, you are the diehard fan, so I want to pick your brain here. Is there anything, you know, this is your favorite movie, so, you know, what flaws are there? Are there any flaws? It's okay to say there's not any flaws.
No, I that's what? Funny. I'm sitting here this whole time like, oh, my God, I have to think of a flaw. I have to think of a flaw. It's hard for me. I agree with you, Ryan. I think that, like, that the beginning doesn't bother me because I think it builds, you know, on a little bit of the manic energy that comes later. It's such a, such a contrast. I know some people, I've heard them complain about the parts where they're exploring and it, you know, but I just think that kind of builds the tension where they're all going throughout the house to look at things.
Right. Like where Green and Yvette are like standing up the stairs like for like ever, like both trying to like get thing. Up the stairs. Yeah.
Can I ask this? What tension? And I mean that, like, did you, I was that. Never under any,
I was a kid. I was a kid. Tension. So
it's not, sorry.
You were a kid. You're a grown man now.
Right. But no, when I watch those, so for instance, the part where they're sitting there staring up the stairs and not moving, I remember being a kid and looking down my basement stairs, feeling the same way. And so those are kind of some of the feelings that I got when watching that movie. Or my sister used to love to like hide behind stuff and jump out and scare the shit out of me. Right. And so the part where they're looking at the curtains and he's like, and she has to like creep up on him. Like, so when I was little, that stuff, honestly, that movie was a little scary for me. I think it's part of why I like it. I love horror movies. And I think that's where it started is
right in.
Is some of this, I know it's supposed to be only a funny movie, but for me, there was a little bit of fear with it as well.
So I, to me,
big scary house with big dark unknown rooms. I get it.
I guess my question is, did we actually, maybe as a kid you felt it, but now do we feel like there was I don't know. Are we concerned even if they do die?
So it's not tension. It's you're waiting for the next murder because you know that these side characters
are right,
yeah. You know, I can see where he's coming from as a younger, you're like, oh, creepy stairs, you know. Totally get that. But like as a mystery, when they all go separate, it's not like, you know, the murder's gonna pop up. They're not gonna do that to these characters because you know they're centralized, but you know you have supporting characters. So you're trying to keep track of where every character is in relation to the house. So you could try to figure out who the murderer is. It's not ooh scary. It's trying to figure this shit out.
And I think now that we've been talking through it, I think maybe that's my only flaw, or not even flaw, but I think the supporting characters for me, as much as I love them, I don't need them. I would be content with watching the main
just one dead body
group. yeah. I honestly like. I think. Some of that really is just used to convolute the story, and I don't think it needs it.
I can see
convoluted
that.
Convoluted enough as it is.
It's right. You know, the whole point of the board game is one murder. But, you know, when you're trying to drive a story, you know, and you want to make those connections to other characters to make the story a little bit more involved, then you have to introduce these other people so they can die. Aaron, what were you going to say?
Well, I'm gonna add on to that because, yes, I am another – I didn't have a whole lot to say as far as criticism, but you're right. Like it gets the other cast, like Yvette, the cook, they only serve as like people to die in the story to be like, now who did this? And now who did that? And where's the murderer?
Yeah.
Well, yes, the cook did more as a dead body than she did as a living character, you know, and she was great, but like, really could have just had the butler and Mr. Body, and the story of the original plot and like ending wouldn't have changed.
Yeah. But you know, to be fair, you get some comedy gold.
From
these supporting characters.
When
the cook falls out of the fridge. And
yes.
Is it mustard? No, it's not mustard. It's Green. Catches her. He goes, I didn't do it. Well, like that
for
was
sure.
That's funny. Yeah. When singing Telegram.
Oh my God. That's one of my favorites.
Bang. Like that's just funny to me.
And I have to say, I love where they go around the house and look at each of the bodies. I think there's one of my favorite lines is when Wadsworth, somebody says that makes six dead bodies, and Wadsworth says, this is getting serious. And they all turn to look at him like, now?
Okay. Anybody else have anything that they might want to, you know, if you could go back to 1985 and pull John Landis and Jonathan Lynn and say, hey, what if he did this? Anything else?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I didn't watch any of the trailers recently. I'd watched them before. I think that may have been part of the problem too, some of the marketing.
Yeah.
They play more straight. I don't think I've ever watched a trailer for it, to be honest. Did they play more straight in the trailers?
It's tough to tell what you're getting into.
Okay.
You know, I think I don't know.
I mean, were you guys alive yet when the movie was in the theaters?
No.
Was what?
I was young. And I said, were you guys alive when the movie was in the theaters?
Just you and Rob, Mom.
I was four. I was four when this movie came out.
Oh my God, I was three. I finally found someone to watch.
Okay, great. So now I know why Jay invited me on the show.
We only make fun of her because she looks younger.
here's what I'm thinking, guys. This movie came out December 15th, 1985. So in terms of marketing, I don't think they necessarily had to go, you know, all in and waste money because it's the holidays. People go see movies anyway. And Clue was a popular board game. So I don't think they're like, oh, it's Clue. Let's go see what this is. You know, I don't think they necessarily relied heavily on marketing per se or did a whole lot with it. Because, you know, when you think holiday movies now, we're not having any holiday movies now. Thanks, pandemic.
Right.
But like, I have a friend who every Christmas they would go see a movie. Every Christmas day.
Right.
So maybe that's a part of it. Because
was that a thing in the 80s?
Oh, God, I can almost guarantee it. A lot. I mean, going to see a
Christmas
movie.
Releases?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, think about movies last year. All the Oscar movies come out during the holidays.
No, I got that. I just wasn't
just saying
that
30
way.
Years, going 30 to years.
Yeah, see, I mean, I know families do that. They go see a movie on the holidays, you know, because their family may be spread out that they decide just to keep it to their tight-knit family and go see a movie. I don't know, and I think that's maybe what they were banking on. I don't know.
Well, here was the competition that Clue was up against.
Okay.
In December 85. Of 85 in the theaters. Jewel of the Nile. Enemy Mine.
Dennis Quaid.
The Color Purple, A Chorus Line. Spies Like Us.
So there's two Oscars.
Murphy's Romance.
So right there.
He-Man and She-Ra, A Christmas Special.
Well, there it was.
Right
that's
there.
The nail that's, in the what coffin. I was, that's what I was
nail
watching.
In the coffin.
Spies Like Us.
Spies Like
you
Us.
Got, you've got two comedies, Clue and Spies Like Us. Chevy Chase, an ensemble of good supporting actors that support each other. I'm going with Chevy
really
Chase.
Else. So there were not a lot that was like really released. So, but you're right. I'm sure marketing wasn't the same. If I'm looking at it, like, they probably didn't think they had a huge amount of competition where they had to, like, pull out the stops like they do for marketing. Obviously, now it's evolved quite a bit. But I could see that. They probably thought, too, like, it was something very different, very with a lot of ingenuity. So they probably thought that in and of itself was going to bring audiences to the theater.
Agreed.
John Landis directed Spies Like Us, by the way.
Who did?
John Landis.
Oh.
That's probably why he didn't direct this. They gave it to Lynn. Makes sense now.
I was trying to see how much money it made to test your theory.
Seriously.
While Jay is finding that, does anybody else have anything else they want to talk about when it comes to improvement before we talk about Clue's impact in our world today?
Well, I don't know if it was necessarily an improvement, but another fun fact, and this may have improved it, or depending on your point of view, the original, there's another guy they wanted to do Wadsworth, and I don't know who he was. I've never heard of him before, but Leonard Rossiter, he was a British actor, but he was their first choice. Their second choice was Rowan Atkinson, so Mr. Bean could have been the butler, just throwing that out there. So that I feel like that would have made for a completely different.
I don't think anybody could deliver the 2+1+2+1 live, like Tim Curry.
Yeah.
So
I think Bean at the time was, I mean, he was doing the Mr. Bean, like Rowan Atkinson was doing. Bean
at the time, though?
I think in the 80s, yeah. I believe so. I don't think he would have really hit it with American audiences as much as Tim Curry would have.
Yeah. Mr. Bean didn't come out till 1990, so he was doing Blackadder at that point.
Oh, I'm so old. Okay.
He was viewed a little differently.
Yeah, I think he just wasn't well known enough, maybe.
Yeah. Okay, so what was the other person's name? Leonard, who was supposed to take Tim Curry's
Leonard Rossiter.
Rossiter. I don't know who that is.
He was a theater guy, mostly.
Oh, he was on 2001 A Space Odyssey. Ooh, we can't talk.
Oh, yeah.
He was in Pink Panther. Okay. But yeah, definitely British. Definitely. Okay.
Which
Welcome
makes
to
a lot
an
of
episode
sense.
Of Flashbacks where we IMDb facts.
IMDb British actors that we don't know.
What a great segue into Impact. but no, let's talk Impact of this movie. I mean, this movie, in my opinion, I think has definitely taken on a cult following. I know for a fact it has. I think it's a great comedy. It's definitely a movie that you can go back and watch, like Rob, like you said, and catch more jokes. Rob, what are your thoughts when it comes to the Impact of Clue? You're the fan. It's your favorite. What's the Impact?
I mean, I think I feel, and again, this is, might just be purely, that is speculation on my part. It might be purely made up, but I think I feel a lot of homages or echoes of this movie in other movies, especially, you know, big, anything that's set in a house where there's, you know, kind of an air of mystery to it, anything that's got like a murder mystery or anything that I feel like I always catch a reference or I catch just very, very, something very familiar or similar to it. So, you know, I feel like this is one of those movies that while maybe it didn't get its credit at the time. And like you said, I definitely think it has developed a cult following over the years. I feel like it's one of those that's probably loved and studied by a lot of people in the film industry and that use things from it or use it for inspiration for other things. But again, that's speculation. I'd love to research more into that. I think you'd have to, you know, talk to specific directors and writers to see if they, if that's true or not. But as far as for me, like, I will say one thing about this, and I meant to bring it up at the beginning when Jay was talking about the people that he thinks like this movie so much. And I know he's going to talk more about that, but I feel like over the years I've met two types of people, and it's either people that have never heard of Clue or it's their favorite movie. Like, there is no in between. Like, you don't find people really that are like, yeah, I've seen Clue. It's okay. Like, they love it or they've never heard of it before. And I just think that's hysterical. And when those people that love it, like, meet each other, like, I'll meet someone every once in a while and I'll be like, Clue. And they're like, oh my God. And we immediately start quoting it back and forth to each other. And it's great. It's definitely one of those movies that, you know, it's quotable. People watch it over and over again, and it's a fun club to be in. People that have seen this movie and enjoy it. So,
okay, yeah, I totally get that. I see that. Jay, what do you think when it comes to Impact?
Yeah, I think Rob's right. I don't think we get a whole lot of murder mysteries of this type. It's either, you know, Kenneth Branagh making Agatha Christie stuff. I think probably because this didn't do well, there's probably a hesitation, but we mentioned Knives Out, which did very well. We're supposed to get another story with Mr. Benoit Blanc, which I look incredibly forward to. And I do, I think there's some stuff in Knives Out for sure. I don't know if there is any connection, but to me, some of the physical comedy from this reminds me of some of the physical comedy and some of Wes Anderson stuff. So I wonder if just like the way they run, it's kind of cartoonish running, you know, and this world of Clue seems like it could exist in some of Wes Anderson's stuff to me. So I don't know if there is that connection, but if there is, awesome. Cause I love Wes Anderson's. I love all his movies. And, you know, I think as people buy the game and we move to this digital content, I actually think it'll keep finding an audience. Just the exact way that I found it. One, some of it was members in the front row saying how much they love it. And I was like, yeah, I'll get to it, you know. But then we got the game, and then my daughter saw it's on sale. Like, you could see that now, right? Because almost everybody is getting their media digitally. So you could very easily see getting your kid that game for Christmas. And then they see, like, oh my, you got to watch the movie now. You can't just get the game. But I definitely think that style of comedy, that really kind of an older style of comedy, I think you get that every so many years. It gets refreshed because it's timeless comedy. Physical Chris Farley, man, king of physical comedy. Physical comedy is timeless. That quick, witty wordplay banter is timeless. And unfortunately, I don't know if it's always going to be mainstream seller, but I think people are always going to find inspiration in that stuff. So,
agree.
And I'm more middle of the road, Rob, but I don't think it's okay. I think it's good, and I thoroughly enjoy it. But it's not my favorite.
All right, fair enough. I found one.
That's better than he felt about Dick Tracy. So
hey. Dick Tracy won 3 Oscars. What'd this movie do?
That's true.
Ouch.
All right, Aaron.
Hey, The Shining got nominated for 2 Razzies, so none of this makes any sense.
That's true.
Aaron, you're 8 hours fresh off your viewing. How has that impacted you? Like, what's
the impact of the last 8 hours?
Yes.
Has been.
All she can think about for 8 hours.
Exactly it.
Like, is your life changed? Like, do you see the world differently now?
No, it made me think I did. No, but it was really funny. Speaking of impact, I'm watching this movie and I'm going, like we mentioned earlier in the podcast, going, well, some of these themes are coming back up now. Like, you know, it's never too far away as far as like, hey, this movie comes out in 1985 and we're still talking about very real potential political corruption, or that people would make backdoor deals, or that people would hold information in order to get secrets and stuff like that. So I just think it was fascinating because I feel like whenever you're going through a period of time in life and things are coming up in either geopolitically or in culture, some things recycle themselves, or you're reminded that, like, no, these are themes that have existed and that may continue to exist or that kind of evolve, but they're like, sometimes, you know, it's not that they didn't go away. Maybe they've always been there. I just think it was really fascinating that exactly like we were saying, like some of this stuff is really relevant right now. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, people really having issues and conversations and feeling witch hunty about, you know, communism or socialism or stuff like that. Now, this was obviously a lot more lighthearted. And it's interesting because in the 80s, there was not a whole lot that was lighthearted about communism or any sort of way. So I also think it's interesting that they made a movie. And maybe that was a thing that critics had an issue with. Maybe they thought they were making too light of a situation that seemed to be pretty serious in terms of, you know, defeating communism globally or the threat of communism, because obviously the Cold War was a tense thing. So
that year on Christmas Day, though, right? When Rocky Balboa defeated Ivan Drago.
And that was maybe the problem with Clue coming out on Christmas Day. They didn't realize.
It's already over. The jokes don't even make sense.
Exactly.
Communism's dead.
We're not watching this movie. It's not worth our time.
Exactly.
We want more relevant content.
So exactly. I just, I think it's pretty cool that, like, in today's day and age, and that, like, maybe they, I don't know, maybe they just didn't feel, or like that part of the joke and some of those things didn't resonate. Like, here they were too, like, you're making fun and poking fun at homosexuality. And in the 80s, that with the AIDS pandemic and everything like that, like, it wasn't something that people joked around about. Yeah. And so here they are taking, you know, they're not poking fun necessarily at Mr. Green for being homosexual. They're poking fun at how people are kind of reacting to him. Like, yeah. I remember him being like, I need to stand up and I'm going to say it right now, like, before any of you other people say it. And I'm going to call myself out. And the way Tim Curry looks at him, like, the way he looks at him, I thought that was super almost hilarious, because it gave me the impression that, like, that was not the blackmail.
Yeah. Then he starts shuffling through his papers like, that wasn't even in here. I don't know.
What? You know, and then, so yeah, I think there are some jokes in there that they joke about that at the time may have been a little more faux pas, and maybe that was a turnoff to critics. That right now then we're looking at and we're talking about and going, oh my gosh, like, they're poking at that or they're making fun of it, and it's just kind of like icky, but it's per our standards in 2020, but back then those were really big deals. Yeah. So it's interesting to see it through that lens. And yeah, I just think it's a great movie that I think I'd be excited to see it in another 8 hours to see what I pick up again. And it was fun. And I do feel like while I was watching it, very much like picking up on all the ways that like big haunted houses or, you know, mystery house or whatever were set up after that, like, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I that's the perfect wrap up for Impact. Thank you, Aaron. Well said. Before we wrap up.
So insightful as always.
Well, right. That's why we have you here.
You're lucky I wasn't drinking.
Are we though? Before we wrap it up, you know, here at the Front Row, whenever we talk franchise, we always talk about rankings. Unfortunately, there's no sequel to Clue. However, we can rank the endings. This movie came out with three endings. There is one ending that whenever it's on TV, if they don't show all three, there's one ending that they go to, and that is the Wadsworth. Wadsworth did it. That ending, they always go with that one. But there are three endings, so we're going to rank the three endings. One is when Miss Scarlet did it, one when Miss Peacock did it, and that's the one that Rob was alluding to where she got shot in the novelization. And then there is the Wadsworth ending. That's kind of like the go-to, that's like the kind of like unofficial ending.
Mm-hmm. The Wadsworth is the one where like everyone kind of kills somebody, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
But he's the main blackmailer is what it boils down to. So.
The main extortionist.
And when we do that, when we give our rankings of the three endings, I want to know, do you prefer the game or you prefer the movie? So I'll go first. So my ranking of the endings, as much as I love the Wadsworth ending, I'm ranking it at number two. Last is Miss Peacock, because I just kind of felt like that was kind of like thrown together. But now it makes sense because it feels like something's missing. So what Rob said, it makes sense. So that's my number three. My number two is the Wadsworth. I really like that ending, but I just feel like the Scarlet ending. This femme fatale, you know, taking, you know, not taking any crap from anybody, being this master manipulator. The actress, oh God, what is her name? Leslie Ann Warren really killed it. And she just was so believable. That is why it's not by much, but that is why it's my favorite, because it's just kind of like this female empowerment and like, you know, I may be bad, but I'm good at what I do, because she's a woman who runs a brothel, but she is a woman in power who does not take crap from anybody. And I just thought, kudos, give it to her. She wins. So those are my rankings. It goes, so three is Peacock, two is Wadsworth, one is Miss Scarlet, and I prefer the movie over the game, because whenever I play the game, I just try to figure it out real quick and I end up losing. So there's that. Rob, we're gonna save you for last, since you are our guest. So let's go with Aaron, since it's fresh in your mind.
Third ending for me would be Miss Peacock. And I don't know if it's also because of the way that the endings were. If you watch the video, like the order they go in is the first one you see is the Miss Scarlet ending. Then you get Miss Peacock, then you get Wadsworth. So I don't know if that just because I didn't see that one first either, if like that had any impact on me in my rankings. But Peacock was like the least, that seemed the most lazy.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, it was just meh. Like she wasn't really believable to be some sort of like, it wasn't like some like Usual Suspects thing where like she was playing all meek and like weak. And then all of a sudden was like, ha ha ha. Like I'm actually this really big mastermind. So Fancy Elizabeth Warren gets number three. Number two would be Wadsworth. I thought that was a little bit more fun. I liked that. And number one was Miss Scarlet, just because throughout the whole movie, and I don't know if this was the original plan, but she was just kind of, again, with the hip thrust, like it was like she was always just kind of like, wow, so who did that? So what? Like she was kind of like curious and like entertained by a lot of it.
Yeah.
Really the whole movie. So that ending just seemed to be the most fun to me. I liked that. I thought it was cool. And then I would prefer the movie over the game because truth be told, I've never actually played the game. And the reason why boys is because when you're actually born in the 80s and you had the game, no one ever had all the pieces. So you'd go to pull out the board game and like the candlestick would be missing or the rope. And it would be like, we can't even play anyway. Forget it. Put it back. Go get Scrabble.
By the time we were old enough to play, everyone was so sick of the game that they didn't want to play with us anymore.
Yeah.
All right. Note to self. When we get together for the 1,000 episode of the Front Row, we're playing Clue. Jay, what's your ranking?
Yeah. And just for the record, Ryan and I were born in the 80s. We were alive in the 80s, just not as long.
Just 4 years.
In the 80s.
Way through.
3.5. 4.5.
Way through.
You're what I like to call Challenger babies.
Oh, you guys were Challenger babies. I was like four seasons deep into He-Man by the time you guys entered the Earth.
That's why she watched the special, the Christmas special, and didn't go see the movie.
That's right. You didn't support Clue.
That's so right.
I think I agree. Peacock is the last one. I agree. I don't know. It didn't feel like a real turn. You know, it just was like, here's this ending.
It felt like number three.
Yeah. But I gotta diverge there. I think I'd put Miss Scarlet at number two. So Ryan, you said it was a women's empowerment thing, and we kind of got an ongoing debate trying to explain to Aaron what women's empowerment is. Right. Is this a craft or a craft legacy? Women's empowerment.
It's craft.
All right, Rob, we did the craft and craft legacy.
Yes, I actually
and
listened
me and
to
Ryan and Aaron's like, aww. yeah, keep going.
Keep telling me all about this female empowerment I've never lived my whole life.
Let me tell you this, Aaron. I know.
Please, you two white guys, tell
Ryan,
me.
Ryan's the most empowered female I know.
I'm in touch, okay?
You are. You're an ally.
I do. I mean, she played it well. You know, I do like the femme fatale angle, as Ryan so put it. But I like the zaniness of the Wadsworth ending. It was just zany and kooky, and I thought it fit best with the movie for me.
Okay.
And movie over game, but that's I play with an 8-year-old, which is fine, but there's also like a 4-year-old there who just like gets pissed off. And now there's a 2-year-old who just like walks across the board in the middle of the game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Might be later in life. It might change.
All right. Rob, you are the true fan. You've probably seen this movie a dozen times. What is your ranking when it comes to these endings?
I'm going to have to go. First of all, it's so many more than a dozen. I'm almost embarrassed to say.
Don't be. I saw Jurassic Park in the theaters 8 times when I was 12. So you're good.
Amazing.
That's, I was eight. Awesome. I'm six. So
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the same as Jay, honestly. Peacock third, although I will say I liked the Peacock ending because they were outside. It's the only ending where they actually leave and go out in the front, which I thought was kind of cool. Then the Miss Scarlet second, and I do agree. I liked her. And actually, Aaron, that was a great point. I didn't think about that. I look forward to watching it again and watching her.
She's great.
Throughout the movie, you know what I mean? And watch her like react to things and kind of, I think that's something that I enjoy about this movie now is trying to watch for little things like, when they all run into the room where Yvette's screaming, right?
Oh yeah.
Like literally just today for the first time, I tried to look to count and see who all was standing there because, yeah. You know, he makes a point about, oh, well, somebody wasn't with us in the room.
Right.
So I think those things are fun, but yeah, the Wadsworth ending is just really is fun. It has that very like end of an ensemble, you know, it just kind of wraps everything up so well. And for me, the thing I think I like the most about that and why I enjoy it the most is there's a good guy, Mr. Green. Right?
To me, yeah.
Like there's okay. a good, in the end, there's one person that didn't kill anybody that was actually a decent, you know, decent, a good guy. Like there was
a representative of the United States federal government. That's definitely right. No blood on there.
No, not at all. especially not in the 50s. But yeah, I just loved that, you know, Mr. Green was a good guy. In fact, like whenever we would play, and that kind of ties in for me for the game versus the movie, I'm going to go with movie, but only because I played this game a lot growing up and my dad murdered us. I mean, just
no pun intended.
My dad is one of a strong believer in, you know, when the kids are old enough to beat me, they will. But until then, I'm going to wipe the floor with them. And he was like would write down everything, you know, like every guess that anyone made, he'd write it down. And he was just meticulous. So I have really bad memories of playing that game. And I still to this day have never beaten him. But in the game, I know.
Oh, my God. I have two stories now.
We haven't played in a long time. But even to this day, I'm Mr. Green whenever I play because he was the good guy. And so that's kind of how I remember it in my mind. So,
okay.
Yeah, that's how I rank him.
And you know, another thing when it comes to the end, that Mr. Green ending or the Wadsworth is the fact that he had them all played. Because at the very end of the movie, and this is how it ends, no joke, like the moment he says this line, it's over. He goes, I'm going to go home and have sex with my wife. And that's it. So,
right.
So, but yeah, that's awesome. Okay. Let's wrap it up. We, you know, this was fun. This is a good time. What a great way to finish out the new year. Rob, thanks again for hopping on. Aaron, what do we got coming up for 2021?
What don't we have coming up for 2021? So many choices and so many movies to cover. We are starting off 2021. Flashbacks is going to be doing 2 episodes a month. In January, we're going to be covering Fargo and Trainspotting. So we're getting all into movies with crazy accents and dialects for their respective 25th year anniversaries. Jay, what about you?
Insanely dark movies. Jay,
I know, right?
Well, I got to say, I am halfway through season 4 of Fargo. That show has me so pumped.
Is that Chris Rock's episode or season?
It is.
I heard it's fantastic.
We'll see how it plays out. It's every season's good. Like the worst season is still great. But season 2 is, oh man, this show is, it took me, I was like messaging with the group, like, has anybody seen this? Cause I'm watching it and I don't know. And then like I watched it took me four episodes into season 1. And then it was just like, bam. Yeah. Oh man, this show's amazing. And it's not just like Fargo. It mixes in like all different elements of Coen brother movies for sure. So I'm super pumped for our Fargo episode. Now I have an excuse to watch the sequel to Trainspotting because I haven't seen that yet either. So that's awesome. But Convince Me host Larry Smith and myself are continuing to procrastinate on our Flashbacks Presents Cobra Kai. We're going to break down episodes of that show But what we're wanting to do is do an abbreviated version for season one and two, since we didn't do that one because season three comes out on Netflix on January 8th. So the goal is to start recording next week, do an abridged season one and season two, a few episodes, and then do every episode of the show we'll do a recording for. So hopefully, allegedly, we're going to be doing that. Also, I'd encourage everyone to follow Front Row Flashbacks on whatever medium you use to listen to your podcast. You can search and join the Front Row Flashbacks podcast group on Facebook to continue our discussion past the podcast.
You can also find the Front Row on Facebook and subscribe to our main feed on Spotify or wherever you access your podcast. We can also be found on the NPR Illinois website under Community Voices tabs, and you can follow us on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z. Also, you can find our Patreon on the Front Row Network's Facebook page. So if you enjoyed this content, there is more like it, and it's available. If you want to join and be a full-time patron, you're going to get access to exclusive things. I know our friend over at Guilty Pleasures is recording a trailer reaction to Coming to America 2. So that's going to be exclusively for our patrons. Wow, can't talk. Made it the whole episode. Dang it.
You did so well, Ryan.
It wouldn't be an episode.
Darn it. All right. Before we do our send off, Rob, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for having me. A fan of the show. We look forward to having you again here on Flashback. So thanks again.
Thanks, everyone.
Before we do a send off, on behalf of myself, Jay, and Aaron, we want to thank our fans of the Front Row Flashbacks. We love doing the show. We love doing it for you. We're looking forward to 2021 and putting out more content. So thanks for listening. We really appreciate you guys. And to my crew, Jay and Aaron, thank you guys for being awesome. You guys make me a better podcaster. I mean that because if you look at the other shows, they sucked.
The other shows of Flashbacks, or the
flashbacks.
Other shows of Flashbacks. The Front Row, you're like slapping down the whole network.
Yeah, really. I'm like, oh,
I was in charge of. Thank you guys. I look forward to 2021. Fans, become go to our Patreon and tell us what movies you want us to do, because we're here for it. But this has been another episode, our last episode of this horrific year 2020. I can't think of a more lighthearted movie to end on. Lighthearted murder mystery, I guess. Anyway, it's been great. Thank you, guys. I am Ryan Lutens, and with me has been
Jay Hoffman.
And thank you, guys, and we will see you all in the Front Row.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio Illinois. For more from the Front Row Network, including our articles or our other dozens of shows, visit thefrontrownetwork.com or nprillinois.org/programs/frontrownetwork. You can also find us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, and on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z.